And we are now being recorded, and we are going to do caffeine this morning. This lab, I threw in there because it's actually quite a fun lab to do. It's the extraction of caffeine from tea, and we do it by two different methods. So we look at extracting caffeine through a classic extraction, doing methylene chloride, using methylene chloride to do the extraction. And then we also do a solid phase extraction. And the solid phase is more of a green process, doesn't involve methylene chloride, and uses non-toxic solvents for the most part, or at least not carcinogenic solvents like methylene chloride. And I present both to show you the differences in the two different types of extractions. And so it gives us a little bit of experience with not only extraction of natural products, something that smells great because we're doing it from black tea, and the brewing of the tea in the morning as we're all getting ready is fantastic. And then it gives you two different perspectives on terms of extractions and starts to introduce sort of green techniques as well and some other modified techniques that we can do. So it's a great lab from that standpoint. It's not a terribly difficult lab, although it does get you or allow you to practice your extraction techniques. And the other part that it introduces is sublimation, and it's got a sublimation in this in order to purify materials. So there's some new things that we're going to learn in this lab, and some practice of some old techniques. And it's just kind of a cool lab to do. So I threw it in there for the natural product isolation. Okay, so let's get started with this and look at, this is the extraction of caffeine. And yeah, screen sharing, we're recording, everything's on, everybody's good, right? Just making sure because I'm not at my best this morning trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing. Okay, so this is from tea. And in the past, we've done a couple of different teas. Sometimes I let people bring in their own tea in order to do the extraction because it's interesting just to look to see how much caffeine you can get out of the different teas. And we like to do it by the dry weight of the tea bag itself. So what we generally do is have Larissa take a bunch of tea bags, weigh them all, and then take out the tea and weigh the bag, the staple, and the string so that we know what the average weight of a bag, staple, and string is. So that when you grab your tea bag, you can weigh your tea bag, subtract that average weight of the string, the staple, and the bag, and the tag, and you'll have just sort of like the dry mass weight of the tea itself. And then we base the extraction on a percent recovery of the caffeine based on the dry weight of tea itself. And you could do that from any tea as long as we can weigh the solid material. So that's kind of the fun part. First off, the structure of tea, or structure of caffeine. Caffeine is an interesting molecule. It's closely related to chocolate. So structurally, they're very similar. And each one of these nitrogens has a methyl group. Each one of the carbons has a carbonyl. There's a double bond there, and another methyl there. So that's caffeine. And as polar as it looks, it's not really quite as polar as it may look. It's all flat. It's all sp2 hybridized. And both of the rings are aromatic. So the nitrogens, while the nitrogens have lone pairs on them, the nitrogens are actually sp2 hybridized and are flat rather than being in a trigonal pyramidal form. So the molecule actually has fairly low intermolecular attractive forces, which allows the molecule to go through and do a sublimation. And we'll talk about that process. Things that sublime, that go from solid phase to gas phase, and then they do deposition, where they go from solid from gas phase back to solid phase, are extremely easy to purify because there's very few materials that actually sublime. So if you can heat up the sample, no matter how many impurities are in it, and you can cause the caffeine or the thing that you're after to sublime, and then recondense back into a solid, then you can separate it from all the impurities without having to go through great big large extractions or all the other types of recrystallization techniques or anything. You essentially get it 100% pure because of the ability to sublime the material. So that's one of the fun parts about working with caffeine and doing this experiment is the sublimation. But when we look at tea, caffeine's not the only thing in tea. There's another a large number of other substituents that are also in tea. So there's a number of things that we call tannins. Tannins are polyhydroxic compounds that are acidic in nature. And the tannins start with gloic acid. And it's gallic acid, I'm sorry. Gallic acid is a polyphenol. And it looks a little bit like the salicylic acid, except it's got more phenol groups on it and in different locations. So this is gallic acid. And gallic acid, when it condenses together, forms a gloyal group. So we get two of these condensed together. Let me see if I left room to draw it here. And I want to make sure that I hit it. Yeah, it's at the top oxygen. So there's one more phenol, one more there. And the last one, the carboxylic acid is here. And this can go on to be a polymer. So this is called a digalloyl group. OYL. And these digalloyl groups react with glucose. And so glucose in its six-membered ring form has a number of different hydroxyl groups on the glucose molecule. And these groups all react with the digalloyl group or digalloyls to form esters. So we get OR on all of these. And this is what we call a tannin. So each one of those R groups is one of the digalloyl groups. So if we take and we color what this R group is here, that group is matching up with what's going on over here. And this whole thing is binding through the oxygen that is here. So that's my oxygen that's actually doing the binding. And that's at each one of those R sites on that on that glucose molecule, the sugar. And this is D-glucose. And so that's the tannins. And tannins, because they have so many hydroxyl groups on them, are extraordinarily water soluble. And when we go through and we do the extraction of tea, we're gonna have to get rid of those tannins. So the tannins are one of the main components that we're gonna be fighting in our extraction process. The other thing that comes out are what are called catechins. So catechins, or a catechin itself, is a single molecule, although there are a number, I think, of different structurally different catechins. And these guys look a little bit like the gallic acid. They're all a little structurally related, but they're also phenols. And remember that phenols are considerably more acidic than are alcohols. So based on the electron stabilization of the aromatic ring system and the sp2 hybridized carbon that they're attached to, and so each one of these phenols are more acidic than an alcohol would be. So we have the phenol groups. This one down here is an alcohol. So that one's not quite as acidic, but these groups, the catechins and the tannins, the gallic acid, the digoloyal groups, all of those things are acidic components that are in there. We also have, besides these, we have chlorophylls and some other cellular components that we need to worry about that we're going to have to get out of the mixture as well, that all extract into water. So all of the colored compounds that would come out from the tea leaves, all of those things need to be extracted out as well and separated from the caffeine. And there are literally probably millions of compounds that are inside the tea leaves, only probably 100 or less than 100 that are in high concentration that we're really going to have to worry about. And that's always the challenge within extraction from natural products, that so far everything that you guys have done has been working with fairly pure materials or adulterated materials, where we've only put one impurity into the material and asked you to extract out that one component of interest from a two component mixture. But within natural products, now we just have a slew of all kinds of impurities. And the job is to extract all of those and then get it down to one single compound. And that's why the sublimation helps with this and makes this process a lot easier. Although when we do special projects, we open it up and we do all kinds of extractions where we have no sublimation. And you have to go through chromatography, multiple stages of chromatography, both thin layer chromatography to analyze what's going on and column chromatography to separate out compounds. And sometimes we'll do one column, get what we think is a pure material, take it onto TLC and realize, nope, there's still two or three things in there. And then we go through and we do another set of column or another round of column chromatography to break it down even more and try to isolate out just that single compound, followed by recrystallizations and all kinds of purification techniques. So this is what's going on within the caffeine, within the tea leaves. And let's look at how we're going to do the extraction. So what they want us to do, like I said, is they're going to give us a tea bag. That tea bag comes with a string on it and a staple on it. So there's a little staple in here that holds this thing together. And like I said, what Larissa did is Larissa emptied out all of the tea. She weighed the bag and then she emptied out the bag. I don't even know how to draw an empty bag over here, but I've got just a paper bag that's now been torn out and the staple. And we've got all the tea leaves that are sitting into here. And she averaged the mass of the bag and string and staple. And so on the box where we have all of the tea bags in the box, written on the box is the mass of the bag and the string and the staple. And so we have average mass of the bag sitting up here. And I think it's something like 0.723 grams or something like that. And so when you take your tea bag, you take it out of the main wrapper, you weigh the bag, and then you subtract that mass from your bag. We don't want to take the tea leaves out because all of the solids would present another problem in the extraction. If we took all of the solids out of the tea bag is going to act as a strainer in and of itself to separate the tea leaves from the extract that we want. And if we don't do that, we'd have to do a subsequent filtration step and set up a Buchner funnel or a Hirsch funnel in order to filter out all the solids before we can move forward. So that's just one more thing to clean and do. And there's no reason to do that when we have the tea bags that can act as the strainer itself. So leave all the tea inside the tea bags. Subtract mass from your tea bag. And then once you get the tea bag, the whole process was identical. I'll grab some drawings here. The whole process was identical to what, to both procedures, whether they be for the methylene chloride extraction or for the solid phase extraction. The process of extracting the tea and getting the tea and then moving forward is all the same until we diverge at one point. And so we're just going to go through the whole process until we diverge, and then we'll talk about both processes and how we go forward with both processes. So what we do is we take and put the tea into a 50 milliliter beaker, and we fill it with about 20 mils of water. And we boil it gently. So it's a 50 mil beaker with 20 mils of water, DI water. And you boil it for, I think, 15 minutes, gently, replacing water as needed. So you want to try to keep it at 20 mils. And what I like to do is I like to take one of the watch glasses and use the watch glass as a condenser. By putting the watch glass over the top of the beaker, it allows condensation to not escape as dramatically while we're boiling this. And because of the shape of the watch glass, it causes the liquid to fall back down in the center, so that liquid, as it's condensing around the rims, will fall down by gravity and fall straight back down in the flask. And so it helps you to retain the water that's inside the flask. And we really just want this to boil gently. So just small bubbles coming out of this little bit of vapor. And you don't want to go crazy with it, because if you overboil it, especially with the lid on it, it's really easy to have the tea spill over onto the hot plate. And while boiling tea smells really good, burning tea does not smell so good. And it's really hard to clean off the hot plate. So what we do is we set the hot plates at about 130 degrees and boil it for the 15 minutes. And then after 15 minutes, we let it cool down to room temperature. And then we start the extraction process. So let's see if we can keep track here. This was step number one, is boil the tea for 15 minutes. Step number two is cool to room temperature. Step number three is to split the extract between two centrifuge tubes. And these are the centrifuge tubes with lids. So essentially what we're doing is taking the centrifuge tubes with the tall lids. Let's see, I'm going to grab all of this because we need this. And we split the tea between the two centrifuge tubes. And I probably, the tea is probably a little bit full in there. Should only, because these centrifuge tubes are about 12 to 15 mils a piece. Maybe even a little bit more than that. They should be about half full. So I've got them a little overfilled in terms of what I've got there. And then after we split the tea into these, the next thing that we want to do is we want to make sure that we're getting all of the caffeine out. And some of that caffeine may have been trapped inside the tea bag. So the idea here is that we want to rinse the tea bag. Let's see, where do I want to move these? Let's put these up here. And we'll get to the sodium carbonate idea in a minute. I'm just going to leave it there for now, and then we'll come back to it. So we want to make sure that we rinse the tea bag. With 2 milliliters DI water. And gently roll it out. And by rolling it out, I mean you roll out using a test tube. sort of taking the beaker that you've got. The tea bag is sitting here and it's up against the wall. So we've got the tea bag in here. And what you do is you take and use a test tube. After you add the water to the tea bag, and you roll the test tube back and forth. And you just do that gently, squeezing the tea bag and getting all the water out of the tea bag. And then you add that water into the two test tubes, trying to keep the volume equal within each of the test tubes. So this is going into the centrifuge tubes. Okay, once we do that, then while the tea is still warm, I know we said room temperature, but you cool it down to the point where you can really work with it. And while it's still warm, it's helpful to add the sodium carbonate that we're going to add to these. So we want to, while still a little warm, add, and let me make sure that I know how much. I thought it was a half. Yeah, it's a half gram. 0.5 grams of sodium carbonate to each centrifuge tube. So we're not taking 0.5 grams and splitting it in half and adding it to each tube. We're taking 0.5 grams and adding 0.5 grams to each tube. So that's important. And the purpose of the sodium carbonate is that this is a base. And so what you're doing there is you're taking all those acidic groups. You can think about the tannins and the catechins, all those things that were acidic. Let's call them not alcohols, but let's treat them as if they're carboxylic acids. And you're reacting them with sodium carbonate. The sodium carbonate is going to get protonated and is going to become either bicarbonate or carbonic acid. Let's assume that it becomes carbonic acid. And the acidic group then is transformed into its sodium salt. And what we end up with is H2CO3. And H2CO3 decomposes spontaneously and becomes water and becomes CO2 gas. So essentially, by adding sodium carbonate, what we're doing is we're taking all of those tannins and all of those things that were highly water soluble and would also be methylene chloride soluble. And we are converting them from their molecular form to their ionic form. And what that's going to do is that when we go through and we go to do the extraction process, now those ionic materials, those tannins and catechins and all of those things, they're going to get trapped into the water and not be extracted into methylene chloride because they're going to be ionic in nature and they're not going to be soluble in the organic solvent anymore. So now they're only going to be water soluble. So this takes tannins, catechins, and makes them water soluble. And more importantly, they were water soluble to begin with. These were also water soluble over here. But now they're not organic soluble. So it's the step before we start to go through and do the extraction process. Now at this point, this is where we diverge. So we've gone through and we've done the tea extraction, and this was what my sodium carbonate was for here, because I was placing the sodium carbonate into each one of the tubes. could take this guy and we're adding it here. And this is my 0.5 grams of sodium carbonate that's getting added to each tube. And then you want to put the cap on it and you want to gently shake it to dissolve all that sodium carbonate. So cap and try to dissolve. Okay, at that point, this is where we start to diverge. And so what we'll do is we'll look at each process and talk about the pluses and minuses in each process and how we would go through and do the next step in the extraction. So the two processes that we do from here are a methylene chloride extraction. So this would be the traditional process. And the green process, is a extraction process using solid phase. It is a reverse phase chromatography solid phase extraction. So in the traditional process, what we're going to do is a standard extraction where in the centrifuge tube, we're going to take and add in methylene chloride into the centrifuge tube and cap this thing. And as we add in the methylene chloride, I need to sort of reduce down how much T I've got in here. And we need some room for methylene chloride. Except for the fact that methylene chloride, which you guys are not reminding me, is more dense than is water. So the methylene chloride is gonna go to the bottom of the tube. And so what we're going to do is we're gonna extract this with, I believe it's 2 mils of methylene chloride, and we're gonna do it a couple of times. So we throw in the methylene chloride, and the methylene chloride, when it goes in, starts off pretty clear. We'll make it gray. Actually, kind of yellowish as it goes in there. And so, this is my methylene chloride. And we do the standard shaking and venting. And what's happening there is that the caffeine is transitioning from the aqueous portion and migrating into the methylene chloride portion. And then we go through and we separate those using a pipetting technique and extracting out the methylene chloride. And then we're going to dry the methylene chloride, and then we're going to rotovap down the methylene chloride, and we're going to get the crude caffeine. So it's just the standard extraction process that you've already done a couple of times. The green process is different in that what we do here is normally in normal chromatography. Normal phase, what we have is a column that has a packing material in it. And that packing material is highly polar. And that highly polar material, when we go through and do the chromatography, allows nonpolar materials through first. And then the more polar materials come through. And so the first out is nonpolar. And the last out is the more polar materials. Actually, let's do it this way. Let's do it in elution order. So, elution order. What we get is nonpolar, and then polar. And basically, these guys are first out. These guys are last out. And the material, this solid phase material that's in here, is highly polar. And so it bonds to the polar materials very strongly and causes them to be retained within the column more strongly. And so they elute out last. And so these materials are things like alumina, Al2O3, and silica gel, SiO2. And so these materials are highly polar. So we can think about polar materials as being sort of red in color, and we'll do nonpolar materials being sort of gray in color. In a reverse phase, we turn that around and we take a column and a material such as silica gel, and we bind to the silica gel a material that is nonpolar. And it completely alters how the column works. So when we take a nonpolar material and we put that nonpolar material packing in here, this is something like C18 silica gel, SiO2. And this material now, being a nonpolar material, let's make it gray. That seems like nonpolar. The elution order swaps, and the column will retain nonpolar materials by van der Waals forces. It will strongly bind to those van der Waals forces and will allow polar materials to pass through. And so the elution order changes, and what we get is we get nonpolar materials held within, and the polar materials come out first. So polar are first out, and the nonpolar are the last out. That's the way these reverse phase materials work. And so how does that actually work in terms of a reverse phase? What they literally do is they take microparticles, let's do it this way. They take particles of silicon dioxide and they bind to it carbon chains. They functionalize the carbon at the terminal end, and there is some way in which it is bound to the silicon, probably through some oxygen bond. And this thing winds up having all of these C18 molecules bound to it, and it no longer is really a silicon dioxide. It's now just a great big hydrocarbon, but the hydrocarbon is bound in place and can't come out because it's bound to the solid itself. So each one of these arms is essentially a nonpolar component. So we have all this nonpolar stuff that has been bound to the silicon dioxide, which itself is highly polar, but masked in the center. And so it increases the van der Waals binding forces. And then we can do reverse phase chromatography with it, where it's going to hold on to nonpolar materials. So what we do is we essentially pass the T through this column. And as we pass the T through the column, all of the highly polar materials, all the tannins, the gallic acids, all of those things, all the water, they all pass through the column. And what gets stuck on the column is the nonpolar materials, the caffeine. And it holds the caffeine until we choose a nonpolar solvent to rinse the column with, rinsing out the caffeine. And so we literally, it's like a filter that traps the caffeine itself until we decide to use the right solvent to release the caffeine. And then we can dry that and we can rotovap that, and we can get our crude caffeine. So that's the difference between the two processes that we would go through and do the whole experiment. And so let me detail those out, just give you the two procedures for the traditional, and give you the green process and show you how that would work. And I think we even have time to talk about the sublimation to a degree. We can just call this a one-day experiment and look at how that sublimation works as well, because it doesn't really take that much time from that point. And let me stop for a second and ask anybody if they've got any questions. I've been talking for a little while, and you guys are kind of just listening along. I want to see how we're doing. Does everybody or anybody have any questions on these materials? This is kind of a new concept between the solid phase synthesis. Colin, what you got?
So just to clarify, so the caffeine is the less polar of the stuff that we're looking at?
Absolutely. When we take a look at caffeine versus those other materials, now let's go back up here to the slide up here, that caffeine, while it has a lot of nitrogens in it and it has a lot of oxygens in it, being flat allows many of the dipoles to cancel. And so the dipoles cancel in a way that when we just look at that molecule, we wouldn't naturally think that the dipoles cancel out. But the dipoles cancel out pretty good. And while it can do hydrogen bonding and allow it to be water soluble, its dipole moment is fairly small and is fairly nonpolar because of its dipole moment. So we would say that this is mostly nonpolar, at least as compared to these other polyhydroxy compounds, the gallic acid, the dialico oil groups, the tannins, the catechins. All of those things are extraordinarily more polar than the caffeine it is itself.
Okay.
Any other questions? In terms of what we're doing here with these two processes. No? We're all good? Okay. So let's give the instructions for the traditional, and we don't need quite as many images here. So what we do is, what step did we leave off on? I think we left on step 5. So traditional. Methylene chloride. After step 5. What we're going to do is we're going to add 3 milliliters of methylene chloride to each tube. We're going to do the shaking and venting. Remember that the venting is critically important because you develop gases whenever you add an organic and an aqueous solution. There's a little bit of heat that's evolved. The tea may still be a little bit warm, so you need to be careful that the methylene chloride doesn't vaporize and that you're allowing sufficient time for it to vent so that you're not building gases up in that. And then once we do that, you're going to, when we say shake and vent, this is going to be for approximately 30 seconds of shaking and venting, making sure that you're stopping every few shakes to vent sufficiently. When this happens, you're going to get a pretty strong emulsion. So an emulsion develops. And remember, we talked about emulsions, that emulsions are where the materials in the solutions are acting as an emulsifying agent, binding to both the polar and nonpolar solvents. And they're holding the polar solvents and the nonpolar solvents together. And there's no way to not get in an emulsion in this process. So when we've got this tube and we've shaken it up, essentially what we get out of this is an area inside the tube that is just sort of grayish in color and extends through a good portion of the tube. And at the bottom of the tube, it's a little bit yellow, where we have some methylene chloride that is sitting out. And at the top, it's pretty gray. But we have this great big band, which is the emulsion itself. And we need to break that emulsion. And because we're in the centrifuge tubes, the easiest way to break the emulsion this time is to just centrifuge them for a few minutes. So usually like 5 minutes, we take and we put them in a centrifuge. The centrifuge itself is a device that sits on the countertop, has a lid on it. It's pretty simple to use. So number 8, we're going to balance the tubes. For mass, meaning weigh each of the tubes with lids and add water to the lighter tube so that they are within 0.1 grams of each other. So we want we want approximately zero, or let's say plus or minus, we'll do it that way, plus or minus 0.1 grams is what we're looking for. So we don't want them to be different in mass more than 0.1 grams of each other, because you're going to put these into a centrifuge tube, in a centrifuge instrument, and we're going to put them apart from each other. And we're going to hope that the tubes are balanced, because if the tubes are out of balance, then what winds up happening is the centrifuge gets out of balance. And it's like a dryer when all the clothes get out of balance in the dryer on the spin cycle, or not the dryer, but the washing machine on the rinse cycle. When the washing machine is spinning and it's trying to get the water out, and all the towels with all the water have like grouped onto one side, and your washing machine starts sounding like it's going to tear apart the house. I don't know if any of you have ever really experienced that. It's traumatic when it happens. It's more traumatic when it happens and it's a centrifuge instrument with all of the chemicals in it. So we want to make sure that the tubes go apart from each other, across from each other is really what I'm trying to say. So that as we put the tubes into the centrifuge, so this is step 9. Centrifuge tubes for approximately 5 minutes and make sure that the tubes go across from each other. So basically what we're doing is we're taking and putting a tube in here and a tube in here so that they're across from one another. And the centrifuges are set up so that 3 people can put their tubes in at a time. And because we're occupying the centrifuge for 5 minutes, it's best is if you are walking up to the centrifuge and about to use it, don't just put your tubes in and turn it on. Look around and call out and see if you can get 2 other people to jump in with you, so that the centrifuge is turned on and we're efficiently trying to get through, because we've got 3 centrifuges for the entire class, but still that takes a little while to centrifuge everybody's materials. And it's also a good idea to put a tape label, some sort of label, onto your test tubes so that you can tell them apart from the other students once you open the centrifuge up and get your materials out. And there's just a little timer dial that's on it. So you set the timer dial for 5 minutes and stand back and let it go. And when the dial is done, and you can open up the instrument carefully and make sure that it's not spinning too fast still, and allow it to stop on its own. And once it stops on its own, you can take out your tubes. So once we centrifuge them, then that winds up breaking the emulsion and we get a nice clear extract. So 10, we pull out the extract and place it into a dry 25 mL Erlenmeyer flask and we repeat that process. So we go through and we do that process twice. So 10, extract lower CH2, Cl2 layer and place in 25 mil Erlenmeyer flask. Add 3 mils methylene chloride to each centrifuge tube. And repeat extraction and centrifuge. So when you're done here, and we're now at step 12, what we've got is we've got an Erlenmeyer flask that was a 25 mil Erlenmeyer flask, and it has a layer of what is slightly yellow, a little bit yellow, of methylene chloride. And this methylene chloride extract is now, you're doing 3 mils in each tube and you did that twice. So we should have 12 mils of methylene chloride. And these we should be keeping stoppered with a cork stopper in some way. So that we're not, and this should have a label on it telling us what that material is. Remember that we're keeping everything labeled as we're working with all these materials as well. Okay, the next step here is that we dry this with mag sulfate.
I have a quick question.
Go for it.
Why do we need to centrifuge it on, like why wouldn't it separate on its own, like our past extractions?
The past extractions that you did, particularly the extractions where you had the unknown with an acid or a base component in it, or you actually did an extraction of caffeine, but there was only caffeine in the extraction. There was no other side products in the extraction. Those materials were not sufficiently emulsifiers. They were materials that had clear solubilities in, or preference of solubility in, one or the other of the mediums that we were doing the extraction in. When you do an extraction of a natural product, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of compounds that are in the aqueous component when we go to do the extraction. Each one of those, you can think of them as having sort of a dipole, so that we've got a positive side and a negative side. Or actually, let's not even think of it as a dipole, because it's not even such a dipole. It's more that you have compounds that look a little bit like this. They have a polar side to the molecule and a nonpolar side to the molecule. So these molecules are very large in nature. They're not small molecules like caffeine. They're not small molecules like many of the other types of molecules that we have worked with. When you do the extractions from the natural products, you've got all kinds of cellular lipids. You've got all the things that form the lipid bilayer within the cell walls. You have all the cellular components where the cells have been lysed and exploded open, and all of those bioorganic molecules are coming out, which are very large molecules. And many of those molecules are both water soluble, but also fat soluble. And so we can think of them, this is just a simplistic sort of idea here in terms of a fatty acid. So this is a representation of a fatty acid. But many of those molecules would be fatty acid-like in that they're just really big and they have a polar component and a nonpolar component. And so when we think about that polar component is going to be attracted to water. So let's do it this way. This is my hydrophilic side. And my other side is hydrophobic. So everything that's over here is my hydrophobic side. And what winds up happening is those molecules transition and hold the water so that I've got water molecules that are being held tight over here by hydrogen bonding and other sorts of ionic interactions possibly. And so the water droplets, there's all these tiny water droplets that are being held together. And then I've got all these other nonpolar molecules that are being held over here. So let's just represent these as sort of round molecules that are nonpolar. And it's holding them all together. That's what we call an emulsifying agent. An emulsifying agent is an agent that binds to both polar and nonpolar things and holds them together. So when you use an emulsifier, it's frequently used in things like chocolates, candies, things that are going to bring aqueous and fats together and hold them together so that they don't separate. Those are emulsifying agents. And there's just a ton of them in the natural product extract. And so there's no way to not have this emulsify when you go through and you do the first couple of extractions, which is why we're using the centrifuge to break that emulsion, because it's the simplest and easiest way to do it. Just put it in the centrifuge for 5 minutes and then you don't have to fight it. And it breaks apart the emulsion based on densities, because the methylene chloride is so much more dense than is the water. And so by putting it in the centrifuge, we use the gravity the centrifugal force to drive the more dense molecules towards the bottom of the centrifuge tube and actually break up the emulsion. So what the emulsion really is, when I think about an emulsion, it's little droplets of water. So we can think about just all these little tiny droplets. And these droplets are being held together with the nonpolar droplets. And normally they would separate out just based on their densities and the fact that they are completely non-compatible in a solubility format. But what winds up happening is that we have that emulsifying agent. So let's use this emulsifying agent. These molecules are sitting in here and they're holding these things together. They're binding to the water molecules and to the methylene chloride, the nonpolar components, and they're just holding the whole thing together. And that's what we call the emulsion. So we have our emulsifying compound. We have our water. And we have our methylene chloride. So that's why that emulsion is forming. Any other questions? You guys good?
I have another quick question.
Go for it.
How is it that caffeine is the only thing that's going to end up in the
methylene chloride?
That
is not actually what's happening. So while we say that caffeine is moving into the methylene chloride, the caffeine is not the only thing that's moving into the methylene chloride. So we'll do a separation scheme and show kind of where everything is going. But what's happening is the caffeine is moving into the methylene chloride along with a large number of other impurities. And those other impurities are going to be pulled out when we go through and do the sublimation process. So we have an entire cleanup process that we're going to do on this material that is going to remove out all the other impurities.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So that's good. So we dry this methylene chloride with mag sulfate. We tear around bottom. So step 14 is to tear around bottom. Probably the 25 mil round bottom flask. And then add in the methylene chloride. So we decant the methylene chloride into the round bottom. We Rotavap. After Rotavapping, you're going to get your crude mass. Of caffeine, just by reweighing the round bottom. So at this point, what we would do is we would just cap the round bottom and we would store it, and then we would move on to the next step on the second day, which would be the isolation of the caffeine itself by going through and doing the sublimation. And so what we would do is here at this point, we would remove the caffeine from the round bottom, which is an effort in itself. So remove caffeine. And the way that we do that is you take a round bottom. The caffeine is all along the sides of the round bottom. And you turn the round bottom sort of on its side. And you use a long spatula that's got a good hook edge on the bottom of it. So the spatulas that curve, this is kind of what we're looking for. And you use a motion that is just a back and forth motion at the same time that you're rotating the round bottom. And you scrape all the sides, releasing the caffeine off the sides. And then once you've released the caffeine off the sides, then you can take a piece of weighing paper or a watch glass or a petri dish, and you can take and, oh, I didn't copy it, I'll have to redraw it. You can take and tap the round bottom upside down and dispense out all the caffeine so we get our crude caffeine coming out. And then we would move on to the next part, which is the sublimation. So before we do the sublimation, let's go talk about the other reverse phase chromatography process and what that actually looks like and what's entailed in that. So this is an extraction process that you guys are fairly familiar with. You've done extractions like this. You haven't had to deal with an emulsion before, but there's no real new steps here. It's pretty much exactly what you've done before, where you do the extraction, you do it twice, you combine all the organic layers into one Erlenmeyer flask, you dry it with mag sulfate, and then after drying it, we put it in a round bottom, we rotovap it, we take it out of the round bottom, and we get the crude caffeine. So we've isolated all our caffeine. The solid phase extraction process starts by setting up a different apparatus. So here what we do is this is much more looking like a filtration. So this is solid phase SP, I think it's SPE, solid phase extraction, that's what we're saying. These tubes come pre-made for you. You don't have to make the column in order to do this column chromatography. These SPE columns are sold in order to do certain types of analytical work. And so we just buy them from Aldrich as is, and we use them. And they're made and delivered inside a small syringe. So they take, it's like a 3 or a 5 mil syringe body, and the syringe body, they have already taken and put some sort of base material in here that acts like a filter, and then they add in their SPE material, and they're actually not very tall, and then there's a cap that fits on top of this. And I'm not sure what the cap material is made out of, but it's probably just silica gel that caps it inside of there. And so we have in here our C18 silica gel. we have some sort of cap that's been placed on it, and there's some sort of filter. And it's all pre-made. And it comes in a dry form so that we have to condition it in order to be able to work with it. So we're going to add solvents to it in order to condition it. What we do is we first set up an apparatus, a filtration apparatus. That filtration apparatus looks like this guy. So what we have is we have the 25 mil sidearm flask. And we place a septa on top of that. So this is what's called a rubber septa. The rubber septa look like this. They have a piece that acts like a cork that goes inside the flask. So you put it in like a cork, and then you roll down the sleeve. To seal it. So you can see how I've got that sleeve rolled down in the image over there, that is rolled down over the top, and you can see that little cork sort of protruding into it. And then what we do is we actually, there's a solid piece that is inside here. So inside, this is solid rubber that is sitting inside of there, and there is a hole that extends out through this. So this piece is solid. And what we do is we use an ice punch, an ice pick, and we just punch a hole through that solid rubber so that our SPE column can fit inside of that and sit securely inside of it. And then the other thing that we do is we throw another clamp on here and we clamp it around this guy using one of the small three-prong clamps. It's probably the best thing to do. And clamp that guy off there to hold it in place. Okay, and then we hook this entire thing up to the vacuum trap, and we make sure that we have an ice bath all set to go. So once that's all set up, then we get a number of different solvents, and we add solvents in order to condition the column. So we're going to pass through a number of different solvents through the system. So I think that the first thing that we do is we condition with methanol and water. So they want us to add add 2 mils of methanol to the column, 1 mil at a time. I don't really find it necessary to do it 1 mil at a time, but it's hard to add all 2 mils really, really fast. So what you do is you turn on the vacuum. You add 2 milliliters of methanol. That's going to wet the column with a solvent that is a little bit more polar so as not to shock the column, because remember that the column is reverse phase, so the column is mostly nonpolar. So if we just add water into it, water probably wouldn't even pass through the column. Water would probably just sit on top of the column. But because we put an intermediate solvent in it first and we get it wet with methanol, then the methanol helps to allow water to actually go through this column. So what we do then is add 2 mils of room temp deionized water, and then we want to proceed to the next step fairly quickly. So add 2 mils of methanol, add 2 milliliters of DI water. Next, what we do is we transfer the tea through this column. But before we do this, and I should have put this up before, this should have been step one, and I forgot this step. Okay, so right here. The tea extract must be centrifuged before adding to the column. To remove solids. When you go to add the tea to the column, what can happen is if you add the tea and there's a lot of leaf material or other small particulates that came out of the raw extraction, while they didn't hurt the traditional extraction, they will gum up and clog the column itself. So you can imagine that if you've got a bunch of solid material, that solid material can sit up on here and can gum this column up entirely, and nothing can pass through it if all that solid material goes on top. So what we want to do is we want to centrifuge out all that solid material and make sure that nothing gets in the way of clogging up our column. So when we centrifuge the raw tea extract, let me go grab one of these tubes that we had up here that just had the tea in it. When we centrifuge this guy, after adding in the sodium carbonate and centrifuging it, what winds up happening is because of the way that the tube sits in the centrifuge, we get this solid mass that sits inside the column, or sits inside the tube, and kind of sits at an angle here. And this is a solid pellet that precipitates out. And we want to make sure that we get those solids pelleted into the bottom and that we don't disturb those or disrupt those, and make sure that those do not find their way into the SPE column. That's really critically important to not clog it up. So, so this would have been really, I'll change my numbers. This one would have been number one. Number two, set up the filtration apparatus. Number three, condition the column. And now number four, we want to move to this step fairly quickly because we don't want the column to dry out. So without letting the column dry out, filter both tea extracts one milliliter at a time. Just meaning don't overwhelm the column, just add it in 1 mil portions. And so you are taking all 20 milliliters of the tea extract and passing the 20 milliliters through the column, being careful not to disrupt the solids. Okay, at this point, what we do is we actually take the apparatus apart and swap out the flasks. So what it looks like now, after we've passed all the tea through, what step am I on? I'm on step five. So step five is disassemble. disassemble the Erlenmeyer sidearm, say the sidearm flask. Has out the liquid into the aqueous waste. Clean the flask. And reassemble. Okay, so what we did, and we'll shrink this down a little bit because we're going to fit in a couple of things here, that what just went through this was all that brown tea. And so we've got 20 mils of tea water that are sitting in here in the sidearm flask. And this 20 mils of tea water also has the water and the methanol that we use to condition the column with. And the caffeine is now embedded up here. So the caffeine is stuck, is held in place in the column. And what is down here is the RO minus, the sodium salts of all of those things that we were trying to get rid of. So these were all the tannins. These were the catechins. This is the water that's in here. It's also the methanol. This is all the stuff that we don't want has passed through the filter. The more polar compounds have passed through the filter. And before we release our caffeine, we want to make sure that all of this gets hazed out and goes into the aqueous waste. And we also want to make sure that the flask is clean before we return it, so that when we do actually extract the caffeine off the column, that it's not contaminated by a dirty flask. So a lot of you have two 25 mil Erlenmeyer flasks. You can simply just take one off, put on the clean one and proceed, and then aqueous waste this out later. Or if you only have one, your only recourse is to really go and aqueous waste this out, clean the flask, come back, and then extract the caffeine off the column. At this point, it doesn't really matter if the column dries out or not. The caffeine is stuck on it. And when we reassemble the whole apparatus, then we'll actually extract out the caffeine with a new solvent. So what we do now is, once we've reassembled it, now we're sitting here at this point, and we have a clean flask. And our next step, that was 5, this is 6. Our next step is to add 7 mils of ethyl acetate to the column. Ethyl acetate is an ester that is polar, but not super polar. And so it's a less polar solvent that is going to remove the caffeine off the column and carry that caffeine into the sidearm flask. So looking to see if there wasn't something else that I was supposed to. Yeah. Okay. So so now that we've done that and we've filtered it, and now what we've got in here is we've got our ethyl acetate. The ethyl acetate comes out a little bit yellow as well because it's extracted the caffeine. even though the caffeine's a clear material, we're still getting some of the chlorophylls that are coming through in this. And so we're getting a slightly yellowish to yellow-green solution. Actually, it does kind of have a greenish tinge to it. And this is our ethyl acetate that has now come out, ETOAC, with the caffeine. And there's some water that's in there too. So the next step that we're going to do is step 7, is we're going to dry the ethyl acetate with mag sulfate, just like we would do before. We're going to tear a round bottom. Decant. Decant into the round bottom. Then we'll rotovap. And then reweigh and get your crude mass. Of caffeine. Okay, so that would have been the end of day one. These SPE columns, when they're done, we would just house them out into the solid waste in the waste fume hood. There wouldn't be any organic waste from this because the ethyl acetate would be rotovapped off and collected at the rotovap, and I would be housing that out myself once all that ethyl acetate was collected. And that would be the end of the first day in the extraction process. And then the second day, we would have the sublimation process. So maybe I should stop here for a second and ask if there's any questions either on the solid phase extraction or even going back to the traditional methylene chloride extraction. Or do you have a sense of sort of what extraction you would want to do? Because I open it up and I say, you can do whatever extraction you want. And I just ask that some people do some of the solid phase and some people do some of the traditional extraction to give you an opportunity to see both, just so that they split up a little bit. But whichever one you do, really, I kind of leave up to you because I want you to learn whatever skill sets it is that you're interested in, whether it be the traditional extraction or the solid phase extraction. The nice thing is with the solid phase extraction, you don't have any emulsions to worry about, that it's a little bit easier there. Plus, there's no carcinogenic solvent. Yeah, that's a good question, Katrina. That's what I was just about to hit. Which one tends to have the best yield of caffeine? The differences are that the traditional extraction, the methylene chloride, generally has a higher yield, whereas the solid phase extraction usually has slightly more pure material. So when you do the rotovapping, you see a difference in the rotovapped material, that the material from the methylene chloride extraction comes out a little bit more gray with a little bit more impurities in the caffeine, whereas the solid phase extraction usually comes out a little bit more white, colorless, and has a slightly decreased yield, a little bit less material, but looks a little bit cleaner in the product. Which is to say that that really doesn't matter as much, because in the next step, when we go through and do the sublimation, they both get cleaned up adequately. So which one has the higher yield? I would say the traditional methylene chloride has the higher yield overall, and that the purity is a little bit better in terms of the solid phase extraction. Any other questions? All right, well, maybe let's look at the sublimation and see how we would do the sublimation. The sublimation is pretty cool. The sublimation uses what's called a cold finger. Let's see how much room do I have here. Let's do it here. There's a number of different ways that this could be done. We do it with an apparatus that is called a cold finger. What we do with this is, this is set up like a condenser. It is a condenser with a sidearm test tube. This is going to go to the vacuum. So when we set it up, we'll show the drawing of what this actually looks like and how it's set up in terms of over the vacuum. We have water that goes in. So we use a water hose and water out. So that the water circulates and flows from this inner tube and then goes up and comes out and goes out that direction. And what we do is we take and we put the solid that we want to sublime sitting down in here. So the crude material. We heat this, and once we heat it with the vacuum on. The vacuum lowers, it just froze, I apologize, let it restart. The vacuum lowers the vapor pressure. And by lowering the vapor pressure, we cause the material to sublime at a lower temperature, so we don't have to heat it quite as high. Once we heat it, the material travels in the gas phase until it hits the cold finger where the water is flowing. And then what happens is crystals grow off of this guy. And so we get all of these needles, all these crystals that grow off the cold finger. And they are these beautiful white crystals that are pure caffeine. And sometimes you get caffeine that'll grow on the glass over here too as well. If the glass is cold enough, cool enough, you can get some crystal growth off the sides there. And then what gets left in the bottom of the test tube is this black sort of tar material, which are all the impurities, and this ring of beautiful white colorless crystals that are bound to the cold finger. Once we heat it and the sublimation is done, we turn it all off, we let it cool down, and then you very carefully disconnect the cold finger. You very carefully pull out the stopper and the crystals all come out with it. And then you scrape off the crystals off the tip of this guy. Let me see if I don't think I drew the image last night. I was starting to, yeah, I was gonna put it on the hot plate and show kind of what it looks like on the hot plate. Maybe what I can do is I can grab this hot plate so that I can draw something fast and just show kind of how this is all set up. So basically what we do is we set up the hot plate and we get rid of the tea bag and all of this stuff. And we use a, we use a sand bath that is a fairly tight, narrow sand bath to hold this whole thing together. So the tight, narrow sand bath is fairly tall in order to accommodate our vacuum cold finger here. I'm gonna grab that one more time. So I want that. And inside this aluminum foil bath, cold finger sort of sits here. And we pile sand up fairly high inside here, trying to get the sand up. Up tall, up on the sidearm flask. And let's see if I can make this work. And so this is all sand that is inside here. piled up tall, and we heat this thing, and we place our material that we're doing, and then we have one of the heavy walled vacuum tubings that goes off towards the vacuum. So this is the big heavy walled tubing. And then this tubing is the really small water tubing. And these are going to go to our different sources. We're going to go water in. So this is H2O in. This is H2O out to drain. Not my best drawing, but this is working out. And this is an aluminum foil sand bath. And we would also put this whole thing on a jack stand. So this thing we would have elevated on a jack stand. So that it's in an elevated position, and we would have a ring stand in back that is supporting this guy so it's clamped in place. And that way what we can do is we can lower the heat and leave the whole apparatus hanging, because we're going to heat this thing fairly high. I'm trying to remember what temperature it is. We get close to 180 degrees. I don't see where the temperature is in the sublimation. 236 is the melting point of the pure caffeine. But I think that we sublime close to 180, close to 200. So we heat at about 75%. And heat to nearly 200 degrees Celsius. Sublimation happens with the vacuum pulling on it. In the sort of 180 to 200 range. And we know when it's done, we can look in there and we can use a little, use the flashlight on your cell phone or something to sort of peek into it from the top to look to see when the crystals have developed sufficiently on the cold finger. And you can actually visually see them. Sometimes you can even see visually the sublimation taking place. And then once it's done, we just turn off the vacuum and drop the jack stand and let it cool down and then extract the crystals. Then we go through and we do IR on the crystals and we do a melting point on the crystals, which is a good question of how do you actually do the melting point? So, so number one, here we heat this thing. Heat and sublime. Number two, cool down. Extract the crystals. And then we go through and do a melting point, a mass. We should have done the mass first. Mass and calc percent recovery from dry weight. That's basically looking at the mass of the caffeine divided by the mass of the tea and times 100. So there's your mass percent recovery. And the last thing that we do is a solid FTIR. And for this lab, it was supposed to be just an abstract that we would write. So this was more about the techniques, and I just wanted you, it's not enough here to write a formal report on, in my opinion. So I use this one just as an abstract, writing an abstract. and going and doing it that way. Okay. Any sort of questions on the sublimation component?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why does caffeine sublimate at a lower temperature than its boiling point?
I was waiting for somebody to ask that, the melting point. That's a really good question. So why does it sublime below where it melts? Okay, so what happens is, in order to do the melting point, a better question, or an equally valid question is, how can you get a melting point when caffeine sublimes? If it sublimes, then how am I ever going to get a melting point? Because it's going to sublime before it actually melts. Okay, so both questions. What happens is we're reducing the pressure on the system. As we reduce the pressure on the system, if we think about caffeine as a solid, so caffeine is sitting here as a solid, the solid has a vapor pressure. And so this will be our solid caffeine. And up above it, we have caffeine as a gas. And there is a dynamic equilibrium between the caffeine as a gas, it has a fairly high vapor pressure, and the solid. And remember that a material boils when its vapor pressure reaches the atmospheric pressure. So if we can drop the atmospheric pressure down to the vapor pressure of caffeine, then we can cause caffeine to sublime at whatever temperature we want. So we use the house vac to reduce the atmospheric pressure. Pressure of the atmosphere, we reduce this down to the point where the caffeine can actually sublime. That's why we reduce the pressure. So how do we get the material to actually melt then? So this is how we get it to sublime. We sublime by dropping the atmospheric pressure. So how do we get it to melt? The way that we get it to melt is we take the material and we put the material into a melting point capillary tube. And we pack the tube as normal. So we have our small amount of solid that we've packed into the tube. If we tried to do the melting point on this tube now, the melting point would fail. We wouldn't actually see it melt. We would see it sublime, which wouldn't help us. So what we do is we take the Bunsen burner and that Bunsen burner's got that inner cone sort of here. And we take our capillary tube that is already packed, that has our sample already in it, and we heat it in the tube, get that yellow flame coming off the edge of it until this seals up into a little ball. So we pack the tube, we seal the tube, and then we take the melting point on the sealed tube. And it's called a sealed tube melting point determination. And what this does is, now as we heat this, this has a little ball of glass on it, and we have our solid that's sitting down in here. When we start to heat it, the material initially starts to sublime and it goes into the gas phase. But the gas pressure increases dramatically because the tube is sealed. What happens then is that we have now switched the dynamic equilibrium such that the gas pressure builds up fast. So the pressure of my vapor is high. And what that does is it forces condensation or deposition in favor of sublimation. So we would get sublimation and deposition. Actually, let's do it this way. The small one is sublimation. The large one is deposition. And what winds up happening is with the high pressure on it, we make the melting point or the sublimation point higher. And the sublimation actually gets higher than the melting point. So if we look at what was happening, the material will now melt, sublimation happens where the pressure of the vapor is equal to the pressure of the atmosphere that is on the system. And because the pressure of the atmosphere has gone up by the sealed tube, the sublimation temp has gone up, and yet the melting point has been unchanged. This allows us to actually reach the melting point and have the material melt rather than sublime. So now the solid will actually phase transition and melt, and we'll see melting as opposed to sublimation. And we do that just by increasing the vapor pressure by sealing the tube up. So that's how we effectively deal with that. And the melting point, the literature value is 236 degrees. So our melting point is 236 degrees for pure caffeine. So that's how that all works out. That's a great question.
Cool, thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions? Colin's sort of leading the game here in terms of questions.
I kind of have another question.
All right, go for it.
Why is caffeine the only thing in this here that sublimates?
Oh, that's a good one too. Okay, so why is caffeine the only thing that sublimates? It has to do with the structure of the caffeine, that the only thing that is going to sublimate is materials that have low intermolecular attractive forces, but mass heavy enough that they're solids, but weak enough intermolecular attractive forces that they actually have a vapor pressure. So that has to do with just the structure of the caffeine itself and the intermolecular attractive forces within the caffeine. And I'm not going to be able to adequately explain this other than there just aren't any other materials that are similar to caffeine in structure that actually sublime within the material. So this whole molecule is flat and aromatic and sp2 hybridized, so it's all sp2, and there isn't any strong intermolecular attractive forces that when we look at this material, there's no H bonding. What I have is dipole-dipole. And what's called pi stacking. But these are weak dipole-dipole at best. And so the intermolecular attractive forces within the molecule are fairly weak, which allows it, even though it's massive enough to be a solid, it's probably somewhat of the pi stacking that is allowing it to be a solid, but it has a fairly high vapor pressure. And so it's in equilibrium with that vapor pressure where the material just doesn't seem to melt. It tends to go into the gas phase. And small, light enough to be able to get into the gas phase, but strong enough forces to be able to exist as a solid under room temperature and pressure settings. So, and there just isn't any other materials that are in all of the other groups that are the catechins, the tannins, the chlorophylls, the cellulose from the tea leaves itself. All of those materials are just much more massive materials and don't sublime because of that.
Well, what about theobromine, which is something that I only know about because it's toxic to dogs?
That's a good question. But theobromine, there's not a whole lot of theobromine that is actually in the tea itself. So theobromine is... differs by one methyl group. And I can't remember, let me get the structure and I'll draw it for you. We'll put it up there. And I think theobromine probably does sublime. Yeah, it's just different by one. Ooh, I may have drawn my caffeine wrong too. I may have put my nitrogen in the wrong place. Did I do that? Come on, structured caffeine. Not in the book, that's why. Okay, I know what theobromine looks like. Let me find caffeine. I did draw it wrong. I put my nitrogens in the wrong place. Let's fix that real quick.
Oof.
That's embarrassing, but we can fix that. Okay, so this is actually caffeine, very close to what I had, just a little bit off. Okay, so there's caffeine. Theobromine, let me just redraw them both down here. Theobromine has one less methyl group. So this is theobromine. Chocolate. And the difference is the hydrogen versus the methyl. So theobromine has a little more hydrogen bonding. And I don't know if it sublimes or not. I've never actually thought to look that up. Because of the hydrogen bonding that theobromine may have, it may not hydrogen bond. It may not sublime. Sublimation point, it does sublime, but it sublimes at a higher temperature. It's 290 to 295 that theobromine will sublime, which makes sense because it has the higher intermolecular attractive forces because it's got hydrogen bonding that can actually take place within that molecule. And you're right. Go ahead, Colin.
Oh, no, I was just saying, okay, that's cool. That makes sense.
And the other thing is that theobromine, while very toxic to dogs, it is. Particularly the dark chocolates, because the dark chocolates are the ones that have more of the theobromine in it than the lighter milk chocolates. When a dog eats theobromine, not only is it toxic, but it's just like us eating caffeine. So when we ingest caffeine, you get all jittery and you get all freaky. Dogs, when they have an overdose of theobromine, also act as if they've had just a ton of caffeine. They get absolutely wired and crazy and start throwing up, and it's toxic to dogs in the same way that an overdose of caffeine would be toxic to people. Same sort of thing, which is kind of cool. And I know that because my dog loves chocolate. I mean, loves chocolate, and has been poisoned by chocolate more times than I can care to think about. I don't even take him to the vet anymore when he eats chocolate. We just try not to have him eat chocolate, but when he does, hydrogen peroxide, about a tablespoon of hydrogen peroxide in a little bit of milk, take him outside, let him run around, and let him puke his guts out. Saves me $300 every time. Yes, humans can OD on caffeine, absolutely. If you take too much caffeine, caffeine can be toxic. So good question, how much? Okay, so Pavia has a little thing on different amounts. So the amount of caffeine that is in a single coffee is 12 to 30 milligrams. So coffee, just a brewed coffee is 20 to 30 milligrams of caffeine. What do they say? Instant coffee is like 8 to 20, depending on brand. The espresso, a single serving. Espresso is, this is maybe up to like 2 ounces. A 2 ounce serving of espresso is 50 to 70 milligrams. Decaffeinated coffee. Decaf is 0.4 to maybe 1 milligram. Tea is somewhere in the range of 4 to 20 milligrams. And Coca-Cola is 3.75 milligrams. And so how much would it take to OD? That's a good question. Let's see if toxic dose of caffeine. How many milligrams? Eighty to 100 micrograms per milliliter. So 10 grams with ingestion. I would be dead so long before then. Lethal dose is somewhere around 10 grams. They're saying that it's anywhere from 80 to 100 micrograms per milliliter. Is what the lethal dose is. I would be extremely uncomfortable even with an espresso, but I don't drink a whole lot of, I drink tea, but mostly decaf. And when I'm drinking green tea, I use very little green tea that is in there. It's a tolerance thing. So if people build up a tolerance to caffeine, those people that just drink a ton of coffee, you tend to get a tolerance to it. But it looks like 10 grams is a lethal dose, 80 to 100 micrograms per milliliter would actually kill you. Colin's out to coffee already. That's awesome. All right, let's take a 20-minute break before lecture. Let's call it good there. I've been talking for a while. Go take a break, go get some tea, go get some coffee. And I'll see you guys back for something that I'm a little bit more prepared to talk about, which is our SN1 reactions and our carbocation rearrangements. So let's call it there, and I'll see you guys in a little bit.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Red Bull. No Red Bull. No way, Jorge.
Thanks.
You're welcome, you guys.